Once again, we have a wonderful group of panelists here, and we will start with our panelists' own self-introductions. We'll start with Corvita.
Hola, I am Corvita Raven. I'm a tech blogger and, in general, a tech enthusiast. That's pretty much it.
And what about the panel?
Oh, I'm on this panel because I'm concerned about the future. I'm only 24. This is my fourth year speaking at South by Southwest, and I'm just interested in what the future will look like as I continue to attend more conferences and try to get more youth involved and out here.
Cool. I'm Adria Richards, and I organize this panel because I'm really passionate about technology, and I have certainly, thank you, mic check. I have certainly benefited by attending and speaking at conferences with microphones. speaking at conferences and attending them, and there's just been so many benefits. I'm a technology consultant, evangelist, and blogger.
My name is Scott Hanselman. I'm bringing some much-needed diversity to this panel. I go to about 20 tech conferences a year, and most of the people there look like me, and I don't think that that's ideal.
And Juan Simmons, I'm an IT executive, and I'm here because I care about diversity, and I think that everyone in here should as well.
Excellent. So let's just go ahead and start right with the first question. And Juan, in your experience with tech conferences and working in the tech sector, what do you feel is the current problem? What is the state of affairs that we're trying to solve?
I think that a lot of people try to blame companies or organizations like South By for the lack of diverse faces and voices at these events. But I think that there's a lot of responsibility on people like us. And in many ways, there is a pipeline problem where we're not getting candidates into the process. All of us have submitted ideas to this conference, and it's not difficult, and it takes literally an hour to just put it together. And I think that a lot of people were like me sitting in the audience looking at this and thinking, oh my God, these people sprang from the womb able to do stuff like this. And it's not difficult. It takes prep. It takes dedication. But I think that the pipeline needs to be filled with people who realize that I have a voice. I have something to bring to this conversation, and I'm going to do it.
And Scott, how do you define the problem?
Well, I personally think that too many white people think that, oh, I don't see color. Because if you say I don't see color, you're saying I don't see you, I don't see your differences. And I'm not going to extend my right hand to a person who has no right hand. So if I don't see your diversity, maybe you were you have an amputation, maybe you were in a war, that defines you as a person. But I'm not going to go and like extend your hand and expect you to meet me the same way. So I think that from a white person's perspective, awareness is where it needs to start. That one needs to just kind of look to the left, look to the right, and say, wait a second, everybody here looks like me, grew up in the same neighborhood, everyone's the same age, speaks the same language. Maybe this is not the sum total of all knowledge on this subject. And speak up. And I think that that should be okay for me to do that.
Cool. Adria?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I have experienced and heard from other people is just, you know, when you see folks like yourself, then you think, I can do that as well. And then being able to reach out to them, talk with them, and know that they're real, it gives you a path to follow and be inspired by. So.
And Corvita?
I think the problem is recommendations. Who's telling you about these events? Who's telling you about these people? That's a big thing for me and a big problem that I see. A lot of people might know of these events, might know of other people that would have made a great panelist at these events, but they're not speaking up. They're not recommending those people or those events within their network. So that's a really big problem that I see.
Fascinating. And so to build on that, Corvita, since you have mentioned that you've been young before, you mentioned that you are, you know, concerned about diversity, where do you think the solutions lie? Where, if you could focus in one particular sector to work, where would you go? What would you do?
I would probably hit up my own backyard and start telling my friends, which I do, tell my friends about it. Tell my friends about these conferences. South by Southwest, I have a younger godbrother who does music engineering. South by Southwest is the perfect place for him to be as far as the music part of South by Southwest goes, and he had no clue what South by Southwest was. So I think that's where I would start, is within my own network, within the people that I know, letting them know, okay, here's a place that I'm going to, here's something that I heard about, here's an event that I think is great, here's a meetup that's going on around a particular skill that I know you want to improve on. Recommending those things, even if it isn't necessarily benefiting you, but it is benefiting your network in some way, I would definitely start there.
Hmm. Anwan, from your perspective, why do our recommendation networks start to fail?
I think that our recommendation networks start to fail because, one, we're not doing it. I think often we think, well, I got mine, you get yours. And we think that, well, because I'm here, then I've solved the diversity problem. And I think that we need to, in some ways, get over that perception that having one brown face in a crowd of non-brownness isn't enough. And that the diversity that people bring, and getting away from even skin color, but diversity of ethnic origin, where you're from, diversity of being handicapped or whatever, but that we charge the gates and say we all have something to bring to this, and getting one or two is not enough.
So, Adria, you mentioned before in a little bit of our pre-panel talk that you and some of your co-panelists intentionally made sure that you pitched for panels that did not have anything to do with race. And part of that was about the pigeonholing that tends to happen to professionals of color, to professionals who are sexual minorities, where you start to become that person, you know, the guy that always talks about race, the girl that always talks about gender. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of where you've experienced that in your career and how you've been able to combat that?
Yeah, so being in technology, I've not really experienced that, but certainly on the speaking circuit, and now more recently with the emergence of social media, especially with women and, you know, kind of people's roles in that. But it started, Anwan actually DM'd me in 2009, and he said, "Hey, are you going to submit for South By?" And I was like, "No, I wasn't really planning to." And he's like, "You should," right? And he's like, "If you do, I will." So then it became kind of this group thing, like we all should submit. But then the next question was, oh, what do I share? Like, what can I bring to the table? And I had recently just attended three conferences, WordCamp, Blogging While Brown, and Blog Her, and three different experiences, you know, with some specific, you know, demographics and verticals. And I was concerned. I thought, I have all this passion about technology, but do I need to wrap it around race? And so for the last 2 years, I didn't. I talked about sci-fi and Amazon, and Corvita talked about digital death and youth embracing social media. Anwan talked about comic books and how enterprise level sort of marketing departments can leverage social media kind of taboos or mistakes. And it was great. So for 2 years, we didn't talk about it. So I thought, now let's have a race panel. And here we are.
That's it. All right. And so Scott, being a person that is in that awareness stage where you understand that something is wrong, you understand there's a problem that's wrong. From your perspective, how do folks who organize technology conferences approach this problem, and where do you see that places that they can make changes?
I think that initially there's multiple kind of levels, like just like the evolution of like denial and guilt and all these kind of things you go through. I think that a lot of technology conferences are in the most basic level, which I call pie chart diversity. This is the same level that Nickelodeon is at, because if you're going to have five friends, you have to have a black guy, a Latino, an Asian girl, the white guy with blonde hair, and a white guy with brown hair. Every show has to have those people. So then I think that it is a well-meaning people, the colorless, like myself, will go out and put together a panel that looks like a beautiful pie chart. Like, it may be aesthetically pleasing, but it is not necessarily diverse. And it is okay, I think, to have a panel of, let's say, five white folks if there's a Frenchman and a Russian and a South American and a South African, and that it represents, and maybe a disabled person. That is a diverse group of people. So I think that recognition and awareness is where it's at. If you're organizing a conference and you're in a room, it's okay to say, wait a second, everybody here has the same perspective. It doesn't necessarily mean everybody here is white, and what's up with that? It means we all have the same perspective. Let's look outside our city. Let's look outside our circle for other kind of people who have diversity of perspective. So get out of pie chart diversity.
pie chart diversity is one of the many problems. We have this, you know, we also call it tokenization, right? We have these people that fit into very certain slots. But sometimes, you know, we start slotting ourselves into the place where we think that we fit or we feel like we need to go. Corvita, let's talk a little bit about this idea of identity baggage, right? The things that we may bring to the table that are getting in our own way.
For me, it's just being young. You know, sometimes I don't feel like I have enough experience. And so that when I talk about something, people might be like, okay, she is how old? And she's done what with her life? But to combat that, I simply just go in. You got to go in and you got to own it as best as you can. And one of the things that I said last year at somebody else's panel was that passion is more contagious than expertise. So I've gotten over that by not, you know, necessarily focusing on trying to be an expert and trying to be right about everything, but just coming up to the stage and sharing my passion. And that's been a great way to connect with other people in the process and get people to listen to me and hear me out. They're just kind of hooked on the passion, so to speak. But it's definitely a problem. You feel like when you're in a room with a bunch of older people that you won't be seen. In addition to being black, you just won't be seen or heard. But again, passion has pretty much overtaken all of that for me.
How many people can co-sign what Corvita's saying? Fabulous.
Hey.
Yeah. When I started working in the workforce, I was 17. And it was really, really difficult in that way, particularly in a corporate environment. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying. I'm 28 now, so a little bit out of that phase. Adria, what about your identity baggage? How have you seen, I know it's so weird to say it that way, identity baggage, but how have you seen identity issues kind of crop up in a way that doesn't necessarily serve you, and how have you combated that?
Yeah, well, as you know, my blog is But You're a Girl, and I started that because I was getting pushback from some clients, you know, asking me really obvious things that I did know. And first it started with a page, and then I turned into a blog. But, you know, recently we were talking about having some stories to share with you all, and I shared the story. I do a lot of YouTube videos about business technology, pretty much. And one of the things people notice is that I have 3 monitors on my desk. I'm quite proud of them. And in one of the comments on my videos, someone's like, excuse me, I know that you say it's a 23-inch monitor, but I don't think so. You should go check your box again and see. Now, meanwhile, I've owned all of these for over 2 years. I purchased all 3. And I'm just thinking, now, if I were of a different race or gender, would you really be leaving a comment on YouTube for me? And Scott had a very interesting share on that.
So that was really interesting because she took that in that way. It was like, wait a second, you're asking me about this. You're checking me because of this reason or this reason. And my theory was that I can totally see people checking you for various reasons. But geekery, when someone is perceived as being wrong on the internet, knows no color. And if you question my knowledge of Monty Python or Star Wars or whatever, I'll check you no matter what your color is. And I suspect that even someone who was just listening to your video or reading the captions and couldn't see it would still wonder, because that's actually the benefit of the internet, right? You could be a 17-year-old Indian kid in a village with a satellite phone, but if you're producing great HTML and CSS, you can choose to perceive. You can choose to present yourself in any way that you want. You can build a business, and I know people who have done that, who put their village to work. And only after doing business with them for a year did I, in fact, discover, well, where exactly are you? You're always up. Are you on the East Coast? Oh no, you know I'm in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. How old are you? Well, I'm 21 next month. But he produced, right? And then the website looked good.
Very, very interesting. So let's do a quick poll. How many people do think that it is as Scott is saying, and that your race, your gender, the online world helps to mute that so that it's not necessarily the same type of attacks? Just quick show of hands. A few. Okay, how many people feel like race and gender, you know, despite the promise of the internet, that, you know, that old New Yorker cartoon, on the internet no one knows you're a dog, and yet somehow people seem to know and figure it out and treat you differently? How many people have had that experience? Unless you're anonymous, which is interesting. There's been a lot of interesting work around anonymity and gender and race and how we race people depending on where they are in context. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And Juan, how about you speak to that a little bit? Have you noticed a difference in how people approach you because of your race or your gender?
Absolutely. I've worked for big companies like Accenture and Deloitte, and I'm almost always the only black person in the meeting, in the building. I sometimes don't see another person who looks like me until after hours when people who clean the building show up. And I think that working in that context, I do work hard to, one, prove that I'm not just a black guy that's here because I, as we talked earlier, took someone's slot. I'm here because I have value that I bring to this company. I have value that I bring into this project. But I still, for example, a few weeks ago, we were wrapping this project. We reached this milestone, and we had this event at one of the local little party areas, right? Most of our people, when you're in consulting and you travel, you're staying in some apartment or some hotel. So there's this apartment, little clubhouse, and there was music. And so, of course, someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, dude, show me your dance moves." Right? Now, I can electric slide on a good day, and that's about it. I might be able to two-step, so I'm like, no, I'm good, right? I didn't want to be defined as, right, the black guy who can, you know, Lindy Hop, whatever. And I didn't want to have that label because I want people to approach me. Yeah, I'm sociable, I'm likable, but I'm also a guy who can set up servers, get software rolled out, et cetera, and so forth, known for my competence rather than entertainment. Mm.
Good point. I have a question. And how do you know?
How do you know?
Like, you might have 50 things said to you throughout the day.
Right.
And you may perceive 50 of them to be racially motivated.
Right.
Half of them were.
Sure.
It's a constant balance. I mean, like, mm-hmm. How do you know?
There are a couple of things that over my career I've learned to help my personal radar about where people stand with race and color and everything. One is relationships. If people take the time to get to know me and I get to know them, then I get a pretty good idea that, okay, they're not seeing me as someone who just, you know, I'm going to email this report and just hope he responds, right? But if they come up to me and say, hey, let's have lunch, then how people come up to you, if they come up and treat you like a person, then in general, you would, I tend to find that they typically aren't seeing me as a color, but as a person, right?
What about superficial? Like, you might go and you didn't like the way that guy bagged your groceries.
Right.
He said something.
Sure.
Like, show us your dance moves. Could have been a totally appropriate thing for him to say. I'm not saying it was.
Right.
I winced when I heard that.
Right.
Because he didn't ask me to dance.
Yeah.
And...
Right.
But how could that ever be a totally legitimate thing? Like, if I asked you
I'm with you. Yeah, yeah.
I would be teasing you because you can't dance.
Because I know you, right?
Exactly.
Relationships.
But does it color every single first sentence?
No. So sometimes it's just ignorance, right? Someone is genuinely making a comment. They have no idea that there could be any racial connotations, right? ESPN, I think, got in trouble with Jeremy Lin, the Asian basketball player, where they had a headline, "A Chink in the Armor of the Knicks," right? Now, the author wound up getting fired, I believe. And I think that he probably had no idea. He thought, I'm using a common phrase, but I'm caught up in this farce because we're so sensitive about race. And so to your question, I think that it has to come down to relationships, right? Do I know this person? How well do they know me? If you made that comment, I wouldn't think any of it. But if someone who barely speaks to me in the hallway makes that comment, then it's set up to be taken out of context.
Now, there's a difference in, you know, the ways in which we interpret this gap. Corvita, it looks like you had something that you really wanted to say.
Well, I was just going to share a story that really quickly, my mentor... I work for TED in addition to my blogging, my tech blogging and whatnot. And one of the things she asked me, she's a very tough mentor of mine. And she asked me, do I go into the office every day? I told her no. We got into this argument about why I should come into the office every day. Now, I have it set up with TED that I don't have to do that because I have other things that I have going on, not just because I don't want to come into the office. But one of the things that she stated, and Beverly Jackson also gave me a similar advice when I met up with her in December in L.A., and she basically told me that your job as a young black female showing up in a predominantly white office is to educate people, is to get them familiar with how a black woman, a young black woman, acts, interacts, how she thinks, how she perceives the world. You have to put your opinion and your energy into the mix so that people become more educated about the ignorance. I constantly have to deal with girls who ask me about getting a perm and stuff like that, which is always an awkward conversation to have with a white girl, personally. You hear the laughter. It's a very nervous conversation, and that's, you know, out of ignorance and not necessarily in a negative way, just unaware of how racial hair is or can be in terms of a conversation and whatnot. But again, it's about having you have to introduce them to that space. You have to introduce them to that energy. You have to introduce them to that culture in order for the ignorance to kind of subside or for them to be educated in the long run.
Now, Adria, do you agree that we always have to walk through the world being ambassadors necessarily for our race, our gender, our sexuality, instead of being able to just come and show up to do the jobs that we have been offered to do?
Touché.
Just asking.
Well, that's a good question. I didn't want to follow up with what Corvita said, because the other thing, too, is there are a lot of identity markers for us that we can't see. Right. So although we can see gender and race most of the time, for example, raise your hand if you have an iPhone in your pocket. Okay. And go ahead and put those down. And if you have an Android. Okay. And now, of course, there's some others. So if you have something else.
Okay. I think you're going for other smartphone.
So it's even more than that, and whether we want to be separated by it or not, giving the opportunity, you have to talk to people face-to-face and allow them to interact with you and share your successes and your failures about just your life experiences. It doesn't always have to be related to these things that make you different. I think diversity is a great thing to have. So
now, Anwan, you've been in a hiring capacity as well in the context of your career. Taking that into consideration, when you know the struggles that sometimes folks who fall into some kind of minority category can face, and particularly in corporate environments, how do you feel about that question? Do we actually need to be ambassadors, or is that too much pressure to put on someone in the workplace?
We need to be ambassadors, and this is why. And I've had personal debates with people about this. I am always aware of my color and my gender, obviously, whenever I'm at work, because we live in a society of stereotypes. Whether we like it or not, we live in a society where people will assume things about you when they first meet you, because stereotypes make things easy. Instead of having to get to know this person and figure out all the complexities that go into personalities and all that, I see an Asian person, must be a smart person. I see a black person, I know about, you know, CP time, probably going to be late. I see a blonde woman, I may question her IQ. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not fair, absolutely wrong, but absolutely a reality. So I am anal about being on time to every meeting. I often get teased. Like, whenever a meeting starts, I'm there 5 minutes early before anybody else walks in, only because I want to be at least one data point in people's perceptions of black people. Mm-hmm. And whether that's fair or not, I'm always aware that I have a role to try to roll back these stereotypes, so that when they meet another black person, after they meet me, hopefully there's less of that tendency to associate behavior to a person only because of the color of their skin or their ethnicity or the color of their hair.
Now, Scott, after listening to your co-panelists talk about the things that they do and how they deal with stereotype threat and stereotype perceptions, how do you counter your stereotypes that you may encounter?
So,
what stereotypes do you encounter?
What kind of stereotypes do I encounter?
Mm-hmm.
35-year-old white daddy with a goatee, you know, hey, how you get the khakis going? You've been rolling in the minivan now. You know, you got to pick up the kids at soccer. I mean, you look like this guy. You look like that guy. You know, all 35-year-old white guys with goatee look the same. Believe it or not, I mean, it is extremely ordinary, right? So for us, it's the sameness. But to what Anwan said that I think is so significant, I think that white people need to know this, is that white people are able to walk through the world and do things with a weightlessness that they do not appreciate. men are able to walk through the world with a weightlessness. I was in Sofia, Bulgaria, of all places, kind of half of a second to third world country. I got there late. I wanted to go for a walk. It's 2 in the morning. I go for a walk in this strange town. I have a great time. It's very peaceful. I come back. I call my wife because the time zone difference is. And she's like, you did what? You walked around a strange city in a foreign country in Bulgaria at 2 in the morning. That is exclusively a male privilege. Very likely exclusively a white male privilege. And you didn't even think about it. And that just blew my mind in that moment because she can't do that. Now, you may argue that, well, she darn well can do that, or she darn well should be able to do that. I'm not arguing that those things aren't the case. But there is weight in that. The very decision that, well, I am a woman and I will go for a walk late at night, and I should be able to go for a walk late at night. That decision, that didn't even weigh on my head, and I float through life with a lack of awareness of that. I don't have to worry about being on time, because I'm just another white guy that didn't show up for the meeting. But, you know, I have to tell my sons that you need to show up, right? Your crown has been paid for. You need to put it on. Mm-hmm. And part of that is showing up.
I agree. All right. So the title of our panel was Race, Know When to Hold It and Know When to Fold It. So it would be interesting to hear from panelists a little bit. In what times have you felt like there was something wrong, there was something amiss, there may have been something racist, sexist happening, but you thought that it would be better to not say anything? Let's start with Corvita.
I may get into a little trouble for this. So the example that pops out in my head, and I'm going to follow up with it. I just haven't said anything yet. But the TED conference this year, we had a nice increase in diversity in the audience. But I was very, very disappointed to not see that reflected on the TED stage. And that is because I feel like even with a diverse audience, you could have a room full of black people. But if you don't have the content that's connecting with them and a reflection of them and their network, they have nothing to go back and share. So they were literally there to sightsee. And that's not what you want at a conference at the end of the day. You want people to talk about it. You want them to be able to go back and share it with their friends. But you have to make a connection, not just in content, but in terms of who's also on the stage. And I think TED failed at that this year. I think they failed at that for a lot of years. But again, I will be talking about it. I got meetings set up. But that would probably be the biggest example.
Good. Adria, when is an example of a time when you held your tongue?
Well, sometimes, Latoya, you cannot tell, like, which identity marker people have a problem with. So let me share this story. So I've done a lot of work in IT, and I got assigned to a project. We were going to be replacing the routers and switches in the back end of several stores, Apple stores, in Minnesota. And I was assigned to work with this guy. I hadn't worked with him before. So I show up. He's an older guy. He's a white guy. That's fine. I've worked with folks like that before. And, you know, we review what we need to do and everything. And I'm like, well, where do you want me to start? You know, I didn't own a MacBook yet. I was kind of holding back. One of the things we noticed about this room where we'd be working is every 15 to 20 minutes, the lights would shut off if there wasn't a lot of activity. And we were going to be doing a lot of work on our laptops. And he's like, well, you could start by just making sure the light stays on. And I was like, oh, okay. And I said, great, after the first 30 minutes, we can switch, and that can be your job. So this is like 4 years ago. But needless to say, you know, whatever, he had a little rough edge. And then afterwards, after like a couple hours, we were laughing, making jokes. And he's like, oh, you should come over for our house. We're going to have a barbecue, and you should meet my son, and we have so much in common. And it was totally fine. So, but sometimes you just kind of have to work off that rough edge.
So. Excellent. Scott, I'm going to flip the question for you. When?
Why are you going to flip the question for me?
Because I feel like it. Moderator's prerogative.
I'm not sure how I want to take that.
Well, you can feel singled out as the only white guy on the panel, or you can take it as an opportunity to show off your skills and
you're
quick
the boss.
Thinking. There you go. Good answer, right? All right. So, Scott, when do you fold it? When is a time, you know, particularly considering your recent exchange with Anwan on the panel a little earlier, when is a time when you're like, you know what, I'm not the expert on this? I haven't experienced racial discrimination. I haven't experienced gender-based discrimination, at least in the classical sense of the way we're discussing it for this panel. When do you fold and say, you know what, I'm going to listen. What's going on?
Usually. I mean, most often, right? Mm-hmm.
How did you learn to do that? Because I can say
I got old.
You got old. All right.
No, I mean, how did I learn to do that? Let me try to answer that. I've spent a lot of time traveling in Africa. My wife is African. We've gone all over, 10 or 15 countries. And we were in Zimbabwe, and we were not just in Zimbabwe doing what do they call it? Poor people tourism. We were living there. So, 5 in the morning comes up and I'm still in the township, and they're like, wait a second, he probably slept here last night. So people were kind of like, what's going on? Who's this guy in the neighborhood? What's happening? And then people came over. They didn't say hello. They just walked up to me and just started touching my hair and pushing on my face. And I was like, well, this is not okay. This is what we do to black folks back home. And then they started to rub on my feet because they couldn't believe how soft my heels were. And I was like, I don't know how I want to feel about this, but they had absolutely no idea. They were ignorant. And I really think that what you said was important, because there's ignorance and then there's just not knowing. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I am an ambassador for my race. And I could be the angry white guy who flew in here in, business class to hang out and then fly out back home to the suburbs. Or I could just listen and understand. And I shut up. And I watched. And I explained to them what sunburn was and why their handprints would stay on my arm and what would happen there. And they left rather than having the experience of petting a random white guy, with a better understanding about, like, oh, this is what your hair does, and this is why your feet are like this, and this is why, and you get sun, what is sunburn? How does that work? And we ended up being close. So then when I woke up in the morning, the neighborhood knew who I was. And it became a, hi, how are you, and welcome, and thank you for being here.
That's beautiful.
Excellent. And Juan, you're also getting a flipped question, all right?
Okay. So, equal opportunity.
Right? mostly. So one of the things I've always found interesting is career advice, particularly from people who are coming at it from a very different perspective. Penelope Trunk is a very controversial business columnist and blogger, and she had written something on sexual harassment a few years ago that got tongues wagging, but a lot of people acknowledge was true, which is that sexual harassment policies aren't made to defend you, the worker. They're made to defend the company, right? And that a lot of times if you do put in a sexual harassment claim, a lot of times you end up being the person that's penalized. So if we apply that framework to race, and one, as someone who's dealt with hiring, when is it prudent to try to pursue, try to pursue a case, try to get some justice? Mm-hmm. And when is it worth it to try to let it go?
I think that if I had a mentee who was a person of color or some minority group, and they came to me and asked my advice about a case and needed to know whether they should hold it or fold it, I would say, first, let's get data. What exactly happened? Tell me what this person said, what this person did. Let's try to parse the data and figure out, on the spectrum of something that's a simple ignorant gesture or outright racist or sexist or whatever, let's try to figure out where that lands. I would also say, let's get someone else involved who is objective, who you trust, and hopefully that person or I know someone who fits that category, and run it by them. Because I think that whenever you have that happen to you, you're in shock for the first few days, if not weeks. I recently shared my experiences with racism when I was a college student. I went to UT Austin, which is not far from where we are now. And I was an engineering student for undergrad. And my last semester, I was an RA. And so someone taped to my door a note that talked about, why is N-word and N-word like you in engineering, shouldn't you be out robbing someone? And beneath that little blurb was a picture, a very crude drawing, of this person raping my girlfriend in front of me, right? So you get that, and you're like, wow, is this happening? And it just takes time to process that. So how I went through that experience and how it made me feel gives me a better understanding of how someone else walks through it. And so I would, and I tell people like what I went through, I first try to be very objective. I'm a digital guy anyway. I'm ones and zeros pretty much, right? Not very emotional, but try to get through, you know, let's cut through the emotion, get to the data. Let's talk to someone objectively, see what they say about it, and then decide from there whether we should talk to HR and we have some kind of HR problem, or whether it's something that we can talk to the person and say, you said this, you may not know that certain people take this in a certain way. Let's take this as a teachable moment so that we can all learn how to handle this better.
And Adria, we were both at Catherine Posey's panel earlier about tech superwomen, and we talked about the mentorship gap. Particularly, mentors tend to choose people that remind them of themselves, which normally leads to folks choosing folks along the same racial lines, along the same gender lines, and many other markers of identity. It's one thing to try to fight these types of discrimination when it's, you know, open and it's overt, it's in the context of a work environment. It's another thing to try to do it in a more covert network like the one that leads to mentorships. How do you think people can help combat ideas when they feel like they might be being subtly discriminated against? You can't get access to the mentor you want, you can't figure out why, you can't get access to, you know, a, maybe a pipeline program at your job. How do you think you should navigate these informal networks?
Yeah, well, that was a great panel that Kath had, and I truly enjoyed it. One of her panelists said something that stuck with me, because this was mentioned earlier in this panel, but, you know, you have these networks, and you sort of reach a point where you've saturated your network in terms of information exchange. So what do you do from there? You need to find other networks. And Niloufer had said on the panel, in order to begin to join other networks, don't think about what you can get, but think about what you can give. So she wanted to be on a board. Well, surely you could go around and say, can I be on your board? Can I be on your board? But instead she approached an individual that she had a loose relationship with and said, you know what, I've noticed you have a problem. You have no women on your board at all. He acknowledged it. And the other thing that I really liked that she pointed out was people who know they have a problem also probably don't know how to solve it. So by you pointing out that it's already broken, you are not helping. So what she said then was, I know people. I have a really big network. So what I can do is recommend people over to you to fix your problem. What do you think? He was receptive. I think she said they did 10 introductions, 16 meetings, and a new female board member was hired. Thereafter, she received a position on a different board as well, but she solved a problem, and by doing that, she showed her actual value as well. So, I mean, I think it's tough, but it's doable.
Right. I mean, we could talk about these discussions all day long. Unfortunately, we have about 5 more minutes before we open up for questions and answers. If you all have a question or a comment, please feel free to put your hand up. There are South by Southwest volunteers who will run you a microphone. All right, so if you put your hand up, they will bring one to you. In the meantime, while we're waiting for that to get all settled, let's just do a little final thoughts from each panelist. If there's one thing you want everyone in this room to take away from this panel, what would it be? Let's start with Corvita.
I'm going to say network. Spread the love to your network. Let them know about the events that you're attending where, you know, you feel diversity is a problem. Bring your network to these conferences, to these events. Let them know. And sometimes it's just a lack of not being aware.
And for me, it would be a visibility. So one of the things I've started doing a lot of is recording and taking photos, and that certainly has paid off in several ways. Quick story. A fellow who fixed my laptop when I moved to San Francisco 2 years ago. His name was Osandi. And I personally had never seen a black Apple genius. So I said, can I take your photo? And at first he's like, no, I'm kind of shy, I don't want that. So I respected that. But then 35 minutes later, I asked again. We had begun to develop a relationship. Maybe Osandi would let me take a photo. He said yes. And I put that up on Flickr. I made sure to describe where I was, who he was, how I knew him. And now recently, a blog, Business Insider, they used the photo to talk about 10 tips when you go to the Apple store. And that actually reconnected us. So we haven't talked for 2 years. But it also shows, hey, there's black Apple geniuses. So visibility is really, really important. So like Corvita said, you know, invite people with you to those events that you're going to, promote it on your social networks and your blog, and tell people. So when they see you, they'll be inspired.
Scott?
For me, I would say awareness. It is okay as a white person to be aware of lack of diversity and mention it and try to find more representative folks. If you are a white person, white man, white woman, and you're on a panel, and there's six white people and they're all the same age and all the same general kind of folks, it's okay to bring it up, but you have to be aware, and awareness is that first step that I think we need to take.
Excellent. And Anwan?
So mine would be empowerment. I, like many of you, started looking at South by Southwest 4 or 5 years ago and became aware that this thing happened, right? And I was always in awe of people that I saw on panels. I was a big CNET fan, so Tom Merritt, Molly Wood, and all their content, I would watch those videos and think, wow. And then they would come to South by Southwest and present. I thought, it's just so cool that these guys are tech experts and they're in Austin and talking tech. And then one day I thought, well, I'm an IT guy. I know stuff about technology too. Why don't I submit an idea? And I did it. First time I did it, I got accepted. And then I was speaking at South by Southwest. So all of you can be up here. All of you have a perspective or something to bring to the conversation. Don't be afraid of this. It's not that difficult to do that. I think all of us, you know, again, you know, you're not born knowing how to do a technology conference, but over time, you just get better at it. So don't be afraid. Go ahead, do the panel picker, look at other calls for speakers, and just submit, because the only way that tech conferences will become more diverse is if diverse people apply to speak at them.
Excellent. Corvita has the last word.
I just want to say thank you to Adria, because she was the one who encouraged me to submit my first panel to South by Southwest. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Excellent. So, all right, everyone, please thank our panelists for a hopefully entertaining discussion. Yeah. And I know there are questions, so where is the microphone currently? Oh, back here. All right, so I guess we'll start in the back and work up.
Hi. Oh, my
Hello.
Voice. I'm losing it. I've been networking too
it's
much.
It's okay. It's the South by party. It's all right.
Hi, my name is Obi, and I currently work at a venture advisory firm. And I'm looking out there and trying to find other startups that are, you know, doing well. But also, as a woman who went to Wellesley, I'm always looking for other women. And also, as a black woman, I'm always looking to include other black people in what I'm doing. And when I'm going out there, I'm seeing that overall, the majority of people aren't 100% together with their presentation. And so when you encounter people in the workplace that look like you but aren't holding themselves as well as you would like, how do you approach them and say, hey, you know, let's take it up a notch?
Help them out. Help them out. I mean, for me at 24, that it's been a big, big, tremendous help to have people like Adria, Anjuan, Scott, you know, just really in my corner supporting me, letting me know this is how you do it. This is how you want to approach it. And sometimes, again, it's just a lack of awareness. They don't know that they need those things. So maybe you want to just point out, well, hey, you might want to get this. You might want to start working on this.
Yep.
You know, let them know about those things that they're missing, because they just may not know that that's what they need to be presenting.
Yeah, I always do. I just wanted to make sure everybody else was aware.
and to add to that, I would say, you know, if you have the time and the resources, then take it, you know, see if they would be someone who could benefit from an informal mentoring opportunity. Otherwise, locate resources like one of the things I'd mentioned to Kat for her mentoring panel is a SCORE, which is the Social Corps of Retired Executives, so business professionals who want to give back and help other business people be successful. You know, take it from there. Otherwise, going to events where they can see what their next step is, where people are.
And if you have ideas too, Adria in the past has sent me many things that can help me as far as like if I didn't know how to write up a contract at one point, how to create my own for personal clients and whatnot. And Adria totally showed me that, gave me a couple examples that she had in her portfolio to give me an idea of what I would need on the table and whatnot. So that, again, it's a real big help when you can put your resources out there too for them.
Yes, definitely.
Do you have something?
Andrew? No, you guys covered it.
Cool. All right.
Don't be afraid to reach out, guys. We need to help each other.
Definitely. We're going to run the mic. And just to add one more comment onto that, one of the things I notice when people are underprepared for an opportunity is that there's a tendency to try to go things alone, right? Mm-hmm. That you see this prestigious thing that you want to apply to, you see this opportunity you want, you see this job you want, and instead of reaching out to your network and asking people, telling them what you want, letting them know that you need help, people try to do it alone in isolation. And when they fail, they keep that failure to themselves, right? Recently, I had to apply for a fellowship that was very prestigious. I was totally nervous. I was talking myself out of it. I was going to go it alone. And then I realized after, someone else had told me that same advice, no, I need to take his advice. I need to go and start asking and pumping my network. So I made it to the semifinals, and I don't know what's going to happen yet. The interview's next week. But make sure that you are tapping your networks. Thank you for crossing your fingers. Make sure you are tapping your networks, because the people that are around you can help you in ways you've never dreamed, but you have to ask. All right. Next question was, I think there was one over here, this lady, and then we'll go to Catherine.
Hi, Contessa Gibson, Chicago. I thought the panel was excellent. I had a question about generational differences from a perception standpoint. I know you guys talked a little bit about, the weight on your shoulder, kind of being an ambassador for who you are, what you represent. However, I thought it was really great that Corvita kind of shared how your mentor kind of opened your eyes. Go to the office, there is a role that you play in all of this. But can you guys speak to just possible generational differences? I know for myself sometimes I may go somewhere and it may not occur to me that I'm the only Black person in the room. And I mean, unless it's explicitly I'm put on the spot and like someone asks a very targeted question. So it may not be, I may not necessarily always be as aware of my race 100% all of the time. And sometimes I think maybe it's generational, but I'm not entirely sure, so I'd be interested to hear your thoughts.
Cool. And Juan, you want to start?
Right. I had an experience where I was assigned a mentee, and this person was a white woman who was probably 45 years old, and at the time I was still Black, but like 27 years old. And so I'm like, I'm supposed to mentor you, and you have over a decade on me. But what I did is that I found common ground, right? She had a family, so husband and kids, and at the time I had young kids. But, you can almost always find common ground. And one thing I always believe about racism and whatever is that we have more in common than we think. And we can always find something that, whether it's sports or music or something, that you can find common ground, anchor on there, or anchor on that, and then leverage that to kind of bridge those differences, whether they're age, gender, whatever.
I just want to say really quickly, there's someone in the audience, Susan Marinette. Can you raise your hand, Susan? So when I first started tech blogging, and answering your question about generational differences, we were just talking about this. I hadn't met Susan yet, but Susan had wrote a post. One of my mentors at the time had written a separate post that posted a bunch of names, and Susan pointed out that there was maybe one or two people on there who was women, and I happened to be one of them. And I fired back a very young blog post that for me and that list, it wasn't about women being on the list, it was simply about technology, and he was the person who wrote the post was simply recommending everyone who was in that network, and I had known that network, so I knew, I was like, I probably wouldn't have put two or three more women on that list personally, but it wouldn't have gotten much bigger. But since then, we've connected in person, and I think she's a great person on top of it. But it's, again, about finding that common ground. At the time, I didn't understand what she was getting at by saying that there needed to be more women on that list, just being hot-headed. Over time, I went to a panel of hers at South by Southwest either last year or the year before and got a better understanding of what she meant when she wrote that post. And again, it's about finding that common ground. And for me, that was an eye-opening experience that I'll never, forget. But it happens.
Excellent.
It happens.
Next question. If you have a question, please put your hand up so they can find you.
Hi, Catherine Posey, founder of Tech by Superwomen. First, I just want to thank you guys. Honestly, this has been one of the best panels and sessions I've been to. It really spoke to me on multiple levels in terms of, as a black professional negotiating race, it was very nuanced. So I thank you for that. My question, and I was talking to my mom about this last night, and I was just remarking that in some ways we never grow past high school. You know, you look at the parties and what happens, and it's like the cool kids hanging out here, and you still have the same dynamics. So and one of the things I know as growing up in a predominantly white environment is a lot of times black kids get grouped together, right? The black cafeteria table, we're all hanging out. So in talking about tech conferences, I would love if you could speak to the role we as black professionals attending tech conferences can do to branch outside of just all sitting together, talking together, hanging together. And it's a dance, right? Because you need to grow those relationships. But what can we do also to branch out and start networking broader, expanding our own networks at conferences?
All right. Adria, can you take this one? And then I'll kick it to Scott for an outsider's perspective.
Sure. I think that that's a great question. And people, you know, have a tendency to continue hanging out with people they already know, right? So I'm sure we're all guilty of that. As well as, you know, we were talking about pattern matching basically before, so you feel comfortable with people who, one, you probably already know and who look like you. But again, looking at all of our interests, you know, we're all here at South by Southwest, but I mean, there's everything from, you know, front-end design to back-end development to mobile. And so I would say a great way to go about doing that is ahead of time. So it's really about your strategy at these conferences. The conference should not start when you get there. You should create a profile. Like South By has their social area they've been building up. You can check out people on LinkedIn, start reaching out, doing emails. I mean, yeah, you can follow the hashtag, but you want to start saying, hey, will you be available on this day? Hey, I'm going to this event. You can actually start inviting folks early on. And then whether you want to invite someone from your close-knit circle to go attend an event, another event with you, great. Otherwise, yeah, spend some time away, and you can bring that knowledge back, you know, to your more tight-knit network.
Or bridge those worlds.
Yeah, or bridge them. So, yeah. So,
really. Scott, what is your perspective?
I think that too often people sit back and they just let life happen to them as opposed to going out and making life happen. And I don't think that you can build a muscle up unless you work it so that you need to go where you don't go. I wanted to talk to older people about web development, so I tried to tweet it and Facebook it, and they didn't see it. Where are these old people? So I put an ad in the newspaper, and I had 150 people show up at a How to Make Your Own Blog workshop. Where did you read about this? Oh, we were garage sailing, and I said, make your own website, and I want to come and check that out. I would never have done that. I would have never connected to these really interesting people who were in the retirement age. So I think that where do you not go? Go there. Go to your, you know, local community centers and libraries and other conferences and conferences you wouldn't ordinarily check out and make yourself known. And then bring your network along with you to that. When you've discovered a cache of interesting people and interesting stuff that's going on, tell a friend and bring them along, but you have to go somewhere that you're not.
Excellent. All right, we're going to try to fit in the last, I think, two or three questions. I see it, so if everyone can keep their question brief, we can probably fit everybody in before the time's up. You, ma'am.
Hi. Hello. Okay. I'm just curious. In my career, I'm very, very technical. I'm an enterprise architect, and it's been more difficult for me navigating gender issues than it has been race issues because I program in 30 languages. I do tech. But when I show up, people just assume that I'm a PM or a business analyst or, you know, something like that. So I just wanted some feedback on, has it been more difficult for you guys navigating gender issues as a technologist or more difficult navigating race issues?
Personally, I just keep it topic focused, and that's honestly how I avoid most of those conversations to begin with. Just, you know, everybody's coming in with their preconceived notions regardless. So for me, the best angle has just been to come in and do my job, you know, just do what I do, and that speaks for itself. And they start looking at you a little different, like, oh, okay, she got some skills over here, you know, and from there, you might have to do a little work and kind of tease it out of them a little bit to be a little more open to the situation and whatnot. But it's funny that you asked that. I was just talking with some of the TED developers, and they were telling me about the culture of coding or programming in males.
Yeah, it's more like people, like I could say something like that's a, you know, a bad time and that's not efficient, and I'll be like, oh, she's really arrogant. You know, where somebody sits next to me and says,
well, I mean, there is research to show that if a man negotiates for salary, he's respected for that, while the woman is not, and often later on penalized, maybe a year or so later. So it's hard, but, you know, the one thing I would say is let your work speak for itself. So what Corvita said, make sure that people in perspective, business relationship type folks can get to know you. That's why it's important to blog or create videos or attend conferences, speak at conferences, and network outside your circle so people can get to know you and how you work.
Excellent. All right.
Just real quick, I know my take on that question is that it's hard to discriminate against excellence. And especially when you tie that to business value, people may not like you, may think that you're too cute to be a coder, but when they see that you can bring business value, that's how business works.
Right.
One phrase.
More.
We say this, talk is cheap, show me the code.
Absolutely.
We will respect you.
Yeah.
And I did ask for your GitHub account this morning so I could follow you.
Yeah. Shireen, digital assistant. I have a question for the guys. And one, you made a comment about being the ambassador for your race. And I find it interesting because in many instances, people are afraid of that. They don't want to have to, it's the pressure of having to represent their race for everything tech. So if they make a mistake, they feel like they're failing their whole race as a result of that instead of it just being an individual failure. And then to Scott, have you ever had to represent your whole race and felt that your failure was a representation of your entire race?
Is that a question for me or for Scott?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm, like I say, we spend a month every year visiting my wife's family in Zimbabwe and South Africa, and we're outside of town, and I might be the first American they've seen in months. I am a representative of my entire race to my mother-in-law, who lives with us. You know, to my sisters and uncles and cousins who we brought over. I'm the first white person they may have sat down and had dinner with and had Christmas with and had Thanksgiving with. I am an ambassador for my race every day.
Right. Yeah. There is pressure, but I've always believed that during the civil rights movement, they experience much more pressure than I'm going to ever go through. No one's sicking dogs. I mean, no one's spraying me with fire hoses. So the least that I can do is be a little bit uncomfortable and just take the heat and know that the pressure may be there, but my purpose is more powerful than that pressure. And what I'm trying to accomplish for people who are coming after me, young people who are in high school right now or in college, I need to do what I can to help them out. And even if I make mistakes, I think that it's really important to be honest and say, yep, I messed it up. I've gone into Twitter tiffs with people and had to go back and forth. But you know what? I'm learning. I'm here not with all the answers, but with a lot of questions. And hopefully we can work together to help solve them.
All right. Lightning round for the last two questions. You, gentlemen, sir, with the microphone.
Hi. My name's Wesley. I have a diverse background. I'm obviously black, but I'm not. It's not obvious that I'm not African-American. Both my parents come from different countries, and so I'm first generation. And I've dealt with racial issues with other black people because culturally I'm a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Just curious how you guys deal with culture differences within the black community.
That's a great question.
Excellent. I stand my ground. I mean, I was the Oreo as a kid. I was the Oreo, and on top of that, I was a geek. And I was one of the first people in my family to really come home and turn on some Linkin Park and blast it. And they were looking at me like, that's got to go. I mean, and, you know, for me growing up, that actually was a bad thing because it made me hate my race for a long time until I went to college and discovered that, oh, my God, I don't have to be around hood black people all day, because that was my neighborhood. But to deal with it, you just have to stand your ground, and you have to own your differences, even within your own culture and race. That's what makes you unique, and that's what sets you apart at the same time, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But for me, I just stand my ground. I don't let it go. I hold on to it, and I'll fight it. You know, you're you, and you're entitled to live your life the way you want to live it, and so am I, right, regardless of race or culture.
Definitely. We all have a black experience. It may be different, but it doesn't make it invalid. And we talk about this a lot on my blog on Racialicious, but in the interest of time, we'll wrap it up, and if you want to come see us afterward, feel free. And our final question.
Actually, it's just a quick comment. An opportunity for people to get to present at conferences very, very easily is BarCamp. If you live in a city with more than 3 stoplights, there is a good chance there's a BarCamp in your city. BarCamp is a conference where the agenda is set by the attendees the morning of the conference. So you can walk in with a proposal for a topic, and if it gets enough votes from people, you can be presenting that day. It's a great opportunity for you to get some practice. Even if you never had a technical network before, it's a great way to break into the tech industry or just presenting.
Cool. And so on that note, thank you so much for that information and a way for people to try it out. Thank you all for attending our panel. We appreciate it. The panels will be around for a couple minutes afterward before they kick us out for any questions or if you want to connect with us. Thank you so much for coming. Enjoy the rest of South by Southwest. All right.